This is Building Bridges, your community and labor report, produced and hosted by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
And I'm Ken Nash.
We present excerpts from the People's Agenda, working for an economy by the people, for the people. A forum presented recently by Building Bridges and the New York Society for Ethical Culture, which examined the present crisis of capitalism and people's demands that the road to economic recovery line directly increasing their living standards and abandoning trickle-down economics. Later on, we'll hear from Professor Stanley Aronowitz on the need for a mass movement to transform capitalism. But first,
I remember there was one politician, this guy kind of flicked his finger, shall we say, at the banks in Cleveland, particularly the Cleveland Trust Company, who insisted that all of the city's debts be paid in full, which forced the city into default. Dennis Kucinich, then the city's mayor, refused to sell the city's utility. Kucinich had the courage and foresight to stand up to the banks. He represents the 10th Congressional District of Ohio. He is a people's congressman. Whether it was having the stamina to look at the issue of impeachment of President Bush for war crimes, or whether it's supporting our real health care system, the single-payer system. And so with that, Dennis Kucinich was kind enough to send us a message. We're about to hear from the people's congressman, Dennis Kucinich.
I want to thank the People's Agenda and WBAI Radio for their efforts in sponsoring this event. I'm Congressman Dennis Kucinich, and thank you for your invitation. Bailing out people and not the banks, what a thought. When you look at what's happened in our economy, where $700 billion has gone to bail out the banks, when you see that money being shipped all over the world, when you see how many neighborhoods are disintegrating from subprime loan scandals, and you see how many people are without health care and without jobs, how many people are losing their pensions, it is time for us to refocus on exactly how America can bail out people and not the banks. One of the things we should be doing is taking a controlling interest in the mortgage-backed securities, not just in giving money to banks in the hopes that they're going to help people, because we know where that money goes. There's a credit freeze in this country. We need to make sure that we keep the millions of Americans in their homes. Americans who right now are on the verge of losing their homes by having the government take the controlling interest in the mortgage-backed securities and then directing a pay down of principal and interest and extending terms of payment. Keep people in their homes. That ought to be goal number one. And you know what? That would help the banks get their money. Because otherwise, the banks get their money and the people don't get to stay in their homes. We need to look at the fact, in this discussion about bailing out people, not the banks, about not making common bond with the insurance companies to have a public-private partnership in healthcare. We already have a public-private partnership in healthcare, and it's resulted in 50 million Americans being without health care, another 50 million Americans being underinsured. Think about that. Those who are calling for a public-private partnership in health care, it's kind of like asking for a partnership between the fox and the chickens and opening up the chicken coop and saying to the fox, you have the option not to eat the chicken. We need to have a universal, single-payer, not-for-profit healthcare system. H.R. 676, the Conyers Kucinich bill, is the path to do it. I work with John Conyers in crafting that bill. Healthcare for all. One out of every $3 spent in healthcare right now, about $700 to $800 billion a year, goes for the activities of the for-profit healthcare system. For corporate profits, stock options, executive salaries, advertising, marketing, the cost of paperwork, 15 to 30%. We are in a position right now where we've took the money that is being spent that goes for the activities of the for-profit sector and put it into health care for people. We'd have enough money to cover all of those who are uninsured and underinsured. You want to talk about health care being used to help everyone, health care being a vehicle for elevating the potential of people, healthcare being a vehicle for economic stimulus. It's there. We need to create jobs. There's already 10 million people out of work. But instead of giving money to the private sector in the hopes that they'll restart the economy and create more jobs, we know what that's actually happened. We give money to the banks. The banks finance mergers. The mergers result in jobs being lost. We're actually seeing a net decrease in employment with the TARP funds. Bail out the people, not the banks. It's time for us to have a real New Deal program in the United States, where we put millions of people back to work, rebuilding America's infrastructure, prime the pump of the economy, get people back to work. It worked in the 30s under FDR, and it can work now under Barack Obama. Start to put the money where it's needed in rebuilding our bridges, our water systems, our sewer systems, our electric systems. Rebuild America. Put people back to work. Give people good-paying jobs. Let people earn a living again. Let them be economically self-sufficient instead of giving money to the banks. It's time for us to start thinking about what we can do to revive the American economy without depending solely on Wall Street, because Wall Street exists as a world and a law unto itself. And while I, as chairman of domestic policy, am working to try to change that, I also understand that unless government takes a meaningful role in stimulating the economy, we're going to continue to be in trouble. Some people say, well, nationalize the banks. Ooh, nationalize the money supply. Why take over the banks' debts? Give the people of the United States an opportunity to have real control over their destiny. Put the Federal Reserve under Treasury. Take away from the Fed the ability to create money and spend it in the circulation, which is what they're doing right now. Money goes back into that bottomless pit in Wall Street. Instead of doing that, give the government the ability to create money debt-free. Spend it in the circulation for housing, for healthcare, for education. It's not as if our destiny is out of our control. So as you come together today, talking about how you can build bridges, well, let's build real bridges. Let's rebuild our infrastructure, $2.2 trillion in needed infrastructure. Let's talk about how we can build bridges from war to peace. Let's get out of Iraq. Let's talk about how we can move forward to create a world where we learn to live together for the economic progress of all. Let's stop the IMF and the World Bank from exploiting third world countries. I know I'm preaching to the choir, but I also know that it's important in this time for all of us to do everything we can to cause our government to move in a direction that it's capable of doing. We have a great opportunity here. We must not squander it. We have an opportunity for transformational change. But we won't get there by being timid. We won't get there by being fearful. We won't get there by being hesitant. We must move boldly and directly. And if there's one thing I know about the people that I have the honor of speaking to at this moment, you're ready to be bold, and you're strong, and you're faithful to your community and to our nation. Thank you for who you are. Thanks to all of you who have put this program together in our common effort to restore economic justice to America, to provide for a more equitable distribution of the wealth, to make it possible for everyone to enjoy a renewed and restored American dream. Thank you.
Economists have said that over the last 25 years, workers' real wages have remained stagnant or gone down, and productivity has gone up. And I submit to you that a large part of that productivity was because of Stanley Aronowitz, our next speaker, because he produces at least one book a year, and I don't know how many articles, and they're all totally on target on fields as diverse as sociology, education, labor, workers' rights, and the labor movement. And I know one of the things that he wants to talk about is that we need a WPA-type jobs program in this country, and I'm sure he has a lot else to say, so let's hear it for Stanley Aronowitz.
I just want to say one thing before I go on. Ken Nash reviewed my first book. He gave it a rave review, and I think he's been prejudiced ever since. I'm very glad to be here, and I'm very grateful that BAI has given us the opportunity to talk about the economic crisis and the vision that we would have. I don't see, right now, too many institutions besides BAI that have the vision to be willing to have this kind of a conversation among various groupings and among various people from various places. And I think that's a very important function that the radio station has performed. I've been one of the beneficiaries of BAI in many ways, one of which is that I've had a chance to present my point of view on many occasions, including on building bridges fairly recently. And we have to support BAI, and we have to support BAI now, as you all know, more than ever. But it reminds me, I think, of what the problems are that we're now facing. We're facing a number of problems in the fight to address the question of the economic crisis. In the first place, the underlying cause of our economic crisis is the systematic deindustrialization, not only of America, but of the Western industrial societies. That's the basic problem. You cannot run an economy on services alone. You have to be able to make things. And the problem that we are facing right now is that much of what passed for prosperity, all of the boom and bust of the last 25 years, beginning in the early 80s, when the deindustrialization began to take legs, is because much of the capital which has been generated is what Karl Marx calls fictitious capital. It's phony capital. And it disappeared just as fast it was, much faster than it was produced. And during this period, it was not the case alone that the problems were because of outsourcing to other countries. Yes, that was a major problem. The second problem was the rapid pace of technological change that took place. Ken Nash talked about the increase of worker productivity. That took place at a very rapid rate at the same time as there was tremendous financialization, you know what that is, and at the same time as there was tremendous outsourcing. But the result is that we lost 50% of our industrial workforce. And as somebody who spent his first 10 years as a worker in the steel mill, we had better jobs than most people in the service economy. I made more money than teachers as a steel worker. And when we think about what it was that really created the jobs that were produced by the New Deal in the early 1930s, in fact, it was the middle 1930s, in the Works Projects Administration and the various programs, it was not Franklin Roosevelt being a wonderful guy. He was a capitalist. He was a conservative. He ran in 1932 on a program of balancing the budget. And in 33 and 34, we had the beginning of a huge strike wave, which continued until 37. That was a four-year strike wave. And then not only did we have that, but in California, we had a movement called End Poverty in California. Upton Sinclair ran for governor in 1934. At the same time as you had two general strikes, one in San Francisco, the other in Minneapolis, a big movement in Toledo, garment workers and miners on strike, and Roosevelt said, Jesus, God, I better get my shit together, because if I don't get my shit together, I'm going to sink. And it was true, he could have sunk. These people are going to form a labor party. And John R. Lewis, who was the president of the Committee for Industrial Organization, actually threatened the labor party. And what he knew that we've forgotten, I have to say this, is that in that period when we had the beginning of jobs programs and the government actually directly employed people, did not give it to subcontractors, did not give it to banks or anybody else, is that we had a communist party, we had a socialist party, we had Trotskyists, we had anarchists, and they were all fighting and organizing. And he was literally terrified. I know that because I went to Hyde Park and I went into the letters. I know that because I've read the history. And we forget the history if we think it's going to come from above. I think it's very important to have legislation. 676 is absolutely important. But until we get out on the streets, there's going to be no 676. They're going to sell us out again and again and again and again. And right now what's happening, as you know, Matt Taibbi said this in Rolling Stone, and I want to endorse it. We have seen a coup in the United States. The banks have undertaken a coup. They have taken trillions of dollars, not $1 trillion alone, but trillions of dollars of our money, and it's going to take decades to pay that money back. But what's important to understand about the current crisis is that in the United States, there's a lot of discontent and there's a lot of anger. I have been fairly lucky lately. I just came back from Dublin, and on Monday, they had planned a general strike because they have taken a 3% wage cut in their salaries throughout the country. They didn't have the general strike because, as labor leaders are wont to do, they were invited by the government to sit down and talk. What you do is you have the general strike and then you talk. We had 3 million people in Paris, and Sarkozy can prance around in London and nobody talks about it, but we had 100,000 people on the street in London the other day while I was in Dublin. We have had in Western Europe a response which is eerily not present here, and I respect the 75,000 people who showed up in New York recently, but we haven't had anything like the kind of protest that is absolutely necessary with 2 million homes taken, and there'll be more homes taken this year in foreclosures. I want to suggest a few things. The first is that if we rely on the political party system as it presently exists and on legislation, I'm not saying we shouldn't do it. To solve our problems, we're going to have a very, very long time of discontent, which will be internal. We are in a period when the crisis of capitalism, not a cyclical crisis, but the crisis of capitalism has reached an enormous depth. This system cannot resolve its problems on the basis of some kind of small-scale reforms. There has to be a massive reverse distribution of wealth from them to us. They have to be new institutions. Thank you. There have to be new institutions created, which in fact, people rebuild their own societies, where the problem of food, which is a serious problem, we've talked about the problem of health. Doctors are not the answer to health. The answer to health is the environment. The answer to health is food. The answer to the health is that people have unalienated work. And as long as we have alienated labor, we're going to have sickness. So we have to deal with the food crisis. And we have to have a program for the food crisis. We have to begin to deal with the problems of agriculture and corporate agriculture. We have to start talking about a massive reorganization of society. Now, look, I know that it's going to take at least a couple of years to get that. But unless we have the vision, unless we have discussions, conversations about what do we do about food, what do we do about jobs, how should we actually do jobs, what kind of transfers of wealth do we require, we're not going to stop these people from doing what they're doing. They're going to continue to do it. They're going to do it on and on and on. And it's not whether it's an Obama or a Clinton or anybody else. I just have to remind you, or remind us, that one of the worst pieces of legislation of the last decades since the New Deal was signed by a Democratic president whose name was Bill Clinton. It was the Welfare Reform Act of 1996. And I have to remind you that unless something really begins to break, this president, however historic was his achievement, and it was a historic achievement, however adept is his intellect, and he does have intellect, he actually can actually, unlike the previous president, can utter a single sentence without grammatical errors. But he's more than that. He's an intelligent guy. That's not where it's going to change. It's not going to happen in the White House. It's going to happen here. Now, what does that mean? What that really means is that protest and resistance is the absolutely necessary starting point of any kind of fundamental change. But this, yes. But I spoke to anarchists and socialists and laborites in Dublin, and I said, not good enough. We have to have a vision of a new society. The economic crisis that we face is a structural crisis of enormous proportions. It can't be resolved simply. One of the first steps has to be that we want the stimulus plan to be shifted from the banks to the people, but you can't just say that. You also have to say, what would you do? Well, one of the things you would do, we would have a health care plan that actually can employ tens of thousands of people, which is 676. We can have smaller classrooms in schools that would employ more teachers and more paraprofessionals. We could have not building roads. You know why? We have a major health crisis. It's called global warming. We don't want those cars on the roads. We have to build mass transit. We have to build genuine places where people can actually go from one place to another without choking themselves to death. We have to have a green jobs program that's essentially a public program and not a private program, because you know why? Because the private sector sheds jobs, and I can demonstrate this to you. The truth of the matter is the private sector has not produced net jobs in the last decade and a half. All the growth of jobs has been right then in the public sector, in health and education. They're throwing people out of work in Wall Street. They're throwing people out of work in manufacturing. We've got to restore the manufacturing base of our society. Now, that's a hard business to talk about, because you know what they're going to accuse people who advocate that of? They're going to accuse people of being protectionist. If I talk to anybody about import substitution, that we have to make garments again, that we have to make textiles again, that we have to make mass transit ourselves, that we have to make the kinds of goods that we are using, that we have to restore the agricultural sector on the basis of small agriculture, they're going to say, you know what? That is not free trade. I'm opposed to free trade. But we should have that conversation. Okay. Why do we want to have a manufacturing sector? Because in the last analysis, not everybody goes to college. Not everybody should go to college. Higher education is a shuck. I happen to be a professor in a graduate school. Most people don't learn a whole hell of a lot. I'm sorry. I mean, no, we don't like the truth. I understand that. Because so many people have their futures and their children's futures invested in higher education. But the truth of the matter is they're starving the public colleges and universities. And we have to reverse the starving of the public colleges and universities, but we have to do much more. We have to have a real educational program, not just schooling. My latest book is called Against Schooling, because schooling is no good for children and other living things. It really is. Working class kids do not learn anything in school. But we have to have schools that really do something. So what I'm suggesting is that when we talk about addressing the economic crisis, that we have to start having some very, very, very serious conversations. And those serious conversations have to do with the fact is that we're not going to address that economic crisis seriously unless it's an anti-capitalist movement that begins to develop the programs. And then let the liberals do the reform. That's always been the case. They're supposed to do the reform. What we're supposed to do is to say it's not good enough. They didn't even let John Connors into the goddamn White House summit until there was pressure. Ali Fine, who's the head of the National Physicians, and John were the only two people allowed in. They had a White House summit without the two most prominent advocates of single-payer health care. That gives you the sense of where the challenges are. We have to create new political formations which have new kinds of visions about a new society. We have to begin to revive the kind of conversation that made the labor movement and the radical movements of this country, and those conversations were about what kind of socialism should we have? How do we achieve it? How do we get from here to there? It ain't going to happen through the New Deal.
Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg.
And Ken Nash. And log on to our new website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.